The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Siegel Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but doesn't the false prediction of Harold Camping claiming that the rapture would come last Saturday, May 21st, doesn't that disprove the Bible? No, actually, it only shows that Jesus was correct when he predicted that false prophets would come and when he predicted that people would someday do stupid things in his name. Actually, if you'll indulge me for a second, I don't claim to be a prophet, but frankly, I made some predictions of my own last week, prior to the end of Saturday, and I made these predictions not about Jesus, but about Harold Camping. First, I wrote a blog on Town Hall the day before, Friday, May the 20th. The blog was entitled, Headline for May 22nd, 2011. Now, you have to catch this. Pay attention. On May 20th, I wrote about a headline for May 22nd, which is the day after May 21st. My blog said, and I quote, since my fellow Christians enjoy making predictions so much, I thought I'd add a prediction of my own. Here is the headline for May 22nd, 2011. World still here. Harold Camping offers new explanation of how he miscalculated and adjusts date of Christ's return. Then on Saturday morning, long before Camping's 6 p.m. deadline, I wrote a much longer piece, this time for my Washington Times Communities column. I expressed certainty that the prediction would not come true. I'm not bragging. That was not difficult to feel that certain. A trained chimpanzee would have known that the prediction wouldn't come true. I told people that when Jesus did not return, rather than blaming the Bible, they should blame nutcase interpretations of the Bible. On my radio show the following afternoon, Camping had not as of yet explained himself, so I made a prediction of what his explanation would be. Here's a brief clip from last week's Bob Siegel Show. Well, I guess he didn't say the entire world would end, but it would happen in stages, first stage being the rapture. And of course, I can't wait to hear him adjust it. My prediction, since my Christian friends like making predictions, I'll make one of my own. I believe he'll say that a stage of Jesus' second coming happened. I can't wait to hear what the stage is. Okay, that's what I said on our show last week. Later on, when my friend Greg Jarvis came on, I said that again, that he would come in stages. I also said something about him coming spiritually. That's what Camping would say. And then, well, what did Camping finally say for himself? The San Francisco Chronicle caught up with this man on Sunday, almost 18 hours after his 6 p.m. Saturday prediction, which means they were interviewing him close to 2 p.m., about an hour before I was doing my show. But at that time, Camping said he had nothing to say, and he wasn't going to say anything until Monday, although he did say one thing to the Chronicle. He said, it has been a really tough weekend. Oh, you think, Harold? You think it was a tough weekend? In any event, here is part of the bird brain explanation that finally came out Monday night on family radio. So I was off by one day. He did adjust his prediction, but he adjusted his prediction on May 23rd. I said he would adjust his prediction on May 22nd. So I was a little bit off. Anyway, here's what he said. He says, on May 21st, this last weekend, this is where the spiritual aspect of it really comes through. God again brought judgment to the world. We didn't see any difference, but God brought Judgment Day to bear upon the whole world. The whole world is under Judgment Day, and it will continue right up until October 21st, 2011. And by that time, the whole world will be destroyed. You see? See, it happened spiritually. We just didn't see it. It's coming in stages. Oh, I'm so glad you explained, Harold. Huh, thank goodness. For a minute there, you had us all going. May 21st was stage one, and now October the 21st, 2011, is going to be stage two. Folks, this guy could sell used cars without the brakes and later on sell you the brakes when you complain. This guy could sell instant water. All you have to do is add water to it and you get water. Camping, have you no shame, sir? Instead of apologizing like a man, you tried to explain yourself by insulting the intelligence of any thinking person? How anyone was stupid enough to listen to you in the first place, sages will debate for ages, but I would think that this would take the cake even for your gullible followers. Still, I won't be holding my breath. Meanwhile, Newt Gingrich has had a few bouts of his own with the whole phenomenon of apology making. As if Newt Gingrich wasn't in enough trouble already from his comments on Meet the Press, another little bomb threatens to wipe out the former Speaker of the House's campaign before his ships can even get out of Pearl Harbor. Act one of the two-part drama took place 2 weeks ago on Sunday morning when asked by NBC host David Gregory about Representative Paul Ryan's proposed changes to health care. Newt said, "I don't think right-wing social engineering is any more desirable than left-wing social engineering. I don't think imposing radical change from the right or the left is a very good way for a free society to operate." Now, since then, poor Newt has been blasted by everyone from Bill Bennett to Rush Limbaugh. Although Gingrich deserves credit for trying desperately to put that horse back in his corral, Flicka seems to have long since galloped off into the horizon. As others debate whether or not Newt's creative clarifications and amorphous backpedaling constitute a true apology or another tired attempt on the part of a politician to pretend that he didn't really say what he actually said, I am forced to focus on an additional blunder taking place with Greta Van Susteren. Ironically, Newt's second shot in the foot happened while he was on a roll, pulling out his first bullet and explaining to Greta how he and Paul Ryan are now cool. Before Mr. Gingrich could breathe a sigh of relief, Greta quickly took advantage of her interview to bring up another controversy, namely a tab Newt was running at Tiffany's and Company's to the tune of $250,000 to $500,000. Greta asked if he could explain the bill and if it had been paid. Now, before we play the clip from Greta, I do want to say he has since been on Face the Nation, and he cleaned this interview up a little bit, not incredibly well. He cleaned it up a little bit, but before we talk about how he cleaned it up or tried to clean it up, let's listen to what he said to Greta, because I do think this is important.
All right. Well, I debated whether to ask you this question, because I, you know, that sort of feeds into, I guess, a little bit of your thought. I don't want to, you know, hand this one to you.
Go for
it. But there's a report today, and I'm not sure the relevance. Maybe I'll figure it out later. But everyone's sort of, you know, seizing upon it that you had a bill at Tiffany's in the range from $250,000 to $500,000, and that became known because Calista, your wife, when she worked in the house in the mid 2000s, she had to report some debts. What's with the bill of between $250,000 and $500,000? To Tiffany's, and has it been paid?
Now, later on, I want you to watch this particular segment, Greta.
Okay.
And notice I talked about jobs. I talked about the price of gasoline. I talked about all sorts of real problems for real Americans.
And I brought this one up. And I brought this up.
In the presidential campaign, we could bring up, and I think it sort of fit in perfectly. And my answer to you is, I'm not commenting on stuff like that. I am perfectly happy to talk about what we need to do for America and what we need to do to help Americans. But I frankly don't want to play the gotcha games in Washington, and I'm just not going to participate.
Now, is Gingrich correct to point out that a bill at Tiffany's looks like low-level stuff compared to the state of affairs in America today? Of course. Of course it's low-level stuff. So why not quickly dispose of stuff like that by simply answering Greta? Contrary to popular leftist opinion, most conservatives, myself included, thought the whole Obama birth certificate issue was a silly waste of time. Still, a fair question remained. Mr. President, if it's all a lot of nonsense, why not just produce your birth certificate and get back to the more important issues you care about? Obama finally did offer his official certificate, albeit several years late, and the issue has all but vanished from any major news media discussion. Okay, then, my fellow conservatives, time to check our consistency radars. What was true of Obama applies to Gingrich as well. Assuming for a moment that the Gingrich campaign can recover, we share Newt's passion for major problem solving and his distaste for unimportant distractions. If you'd rather play bigger games, Newt, your course is clear. Answer the Trivial Pursuit question and we'll be more than happy to set up Monopoly or Risk in its place. Otherwise, Newt, conspicuous question dodging will give life to the very issues you wish would die. Unfortunately, once a mountain is made out of a molehill, we really do have a mountain. At the expense of sounding patronizing, your dead in the water campaign does not need another mountain right now. Now, like I said, when he went on Face the Nation, he did a little better. He answered the questions a little bit, but boy, he still tried to dodge them. He finally said that this thing at Tiffany's has been paid for, but when asked to supply details, he wouldn't give them. He said it was private. So he did a little better. I'm kind of mixed on this because, again, I agree with Newt that on one hand, it's nobody else's business. It's just a little thing. But again, if it's just a little thing, Newt, you need to be more forthcoming. You did a little better on Face the Nation, but just spill the beans. Just give the sort of details. Get it over with. That's my advice to you, Newt, as if he's waiting for my advice. I know. But I got to tell you, nothing Newt says can compare to the likes of Howard Dean, now offering his own brilliant take on Republican candidates. Take it away, Howard.
He needs a Republican candidate. They probably don't have one with candidates who are, who are moving to the far right. Let's look at what these guys are doing. The far right is what I call the hate wing of the Republican Party. They're overrepresented in primaries, and of course, when elections come along, they generally don't win. But they can cause enormous trouble in the primaries. They hate Muslims, they hate gays, they hate immigrants. And the rhetoric in the primary shows that. It's a very unattractive painting for the under, what was the under 35 voters that elected Barack Obama.
Wow, what a cool, rational, brilliant analysis. And this from the people who are always lecturing conservatives about toning down the rhetoric. That wasn't an inflammatory speech at all, was it? Mr. Dean, anyone who dares to call Islam a violent religion hates Muslims. It is impossible that we're just reading what the Quran commands, and anyone who disagrees with the homosexual lifestyle hates homosexuals. It is impossible that they only hate the sin but love the sinner. Does this include homosexuals who turned from their lifestyle and now urge others to do the same? Are you even aware that such people exist? Are you tolerant of a view about gay marriage different from your own, Mr. Dean? And anyone who believes in protecting our borders automatically hates immigrants? Does that include the many legal immigrants who speak out against illegal immigration? Oh, speaking of borders, the borders of the Middle East are also in the news. In America's fine tradition of presidents who can't seem to throw in the towel and give up on a pesky, turbulent part of the world, President Obama followed suit not long ago. As part of a much broader speech on Middle East uprisings, Obama spent a considerable portion of time addressing the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. To his credit, Obama defended Israel by saying, "Palestinian leaders will not achieve peace or prosperity if Hamas insists on a path of terror and rejection. And Palestinians will never realize their independence by denying the right of Israel to exist." Okay, now, that was well spoken, but it can't be emphasized nearly enough. The policy of our own nation, articulated by George Bush on the heels of 9/11, is to never make deals with terrorists or countries that harbor terrorists, and yet Israel has been continually pressured to do just exactly that. Kudos to Obama for at least appearing to appreciate the hypothetical dilemma our nutty world loves to put Israel through. Unfortunately, logic and fairness did not prevail for very long. President Obama, never one to be mistaken for Harpo Marx, moved on with his favorite hobby of long speechmaking. "So while the core issues of the conflict must be negotiated, the basis of those negotiations is clear. a viable Palestine, and a secure Israel. The United States believes that negotiations should result in two states with permanent Palestinian borders with Israel, Jordan, and Egypt, and permanent Israeli borders with Palestine. The borders of Israel and Palestine should be based on the 1967 lines with mutually agreed swaps so that secure and recognized borders are established for both states. Palestinian people must have the right to govern themselves and reach their potential in a sovereign and contiguous state. Okay, then when Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu visited Washington, he gave Obama a little history lesson about Israel. People say he was being disrespectful of the president. Don't you just love this? Our PC world is less concerned about the safety of a nation and more concerned about how the leader of a nation defends himself when asked to shrink his borders. Well, you are the expert at paying attention to borders, aren't you, Mr. President? Especially with the way you handle our southern borders. So, Mr. President, you won't mind if I give you a lecture even more severe than Netanyahu's. When you speak of old borders, Mr. President, have you forgotten your history? In 1967, nine different nations, Egypt, Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, Algeria, Kuwait, Sudan, Saudi Arabia, and Iraq mutually pledged their armies for Israel's destruction. Egypt enthusiastically promised to destroy the tiny state. I'm reading from Radio Cairo, May 17th, 1967. Egypt is ready to plunge into a total war that will be the end of Israel. And then the President Araf of Iraq also offered some fun inspiration. He said, the existence of Israel is an error which must be rectified. Our goal is clear, to wipe Israel off the map. The issue was not a two-state solution. The issue was a no-state solution. No Israel. It didn't turn out as Iraq and Egypt expected. Instead, Israel surprised all of civilization with a preemptive strike, defeating her enemies in just 6 days. At that time, Israel's territory was expanded to the West Bank, the Golan Heights, the Gaza Strip, the Sinai, and the remainder of Jerusalem, half of which had been taken over by Jordan, also aimed at Israel's annihilation. This territory is frequently referred to as a part of Israel's illegal occupation. Now, let's use our heads for a moment. Is it possible, just remotely possible, that Israel expanded her borders because she was threatened rather than out of a desire to occupy? Obama also called upon Israel to act boldly to advance a lasting peace. Boldly to advance a lasting peace. Excuse me, Mr. President, but didn't Israel make bold steps when she gave Gaza to the control of the Palestinians? Didn't our peace-loving Palestinians repay her by firing missiles from Gaza into Israel? Exactly why should Israel expect any other course of action if she returns to pre-1967 borders? And Mr. President, since you yourself acknowledge that Hamas does not recognize Israel's right to exist, are you also aware that the Palestinian Charter itself does not recognize Israel's right to exist, and that Israel does not appear on maps in Palestinian schools? If you are so nostalgic for old borders, Mr. President, how about the original land promised to Israel by the League of Nations through the Balfour Declaration, remember? 75% of what had been promised to the Jews was sold behind her back to the Arabs, creating a place we today call Jordan. Wasn't that enough of a two-state solution? Or how about that other two-state problem solver back in 1947 when the United Nations offered to break up the remaining 25% with both a Jewish and Arab state? The Arabs, who were not yet calling themselves Palestinians, rejected that idea as well, and instead joined attacking nations in an attempt to obliterate Israel, or some of them got out of the way so that the attacking nations could come through. That's how they became refugees. True, some Arabs remained in Israel, and today those Arabs have more rights than most Arab citizens in any Arab country. But this coveted two-state idea was rejected long ago, Mr. President, because Israel's very existence is itself the only real problem to her neighbors. Yes, Palestinians talk about a two-state solution today, but that's just for the suckers. History doesn't seem to offer evidence that such a compromise will be enough. Neither does all their talk about a right of return in which, according to a popular plan, all Arab families of refugees will move back to Israel on the heels of Palestine's birth and basically turn Israel into a second Palestine. By the way, Mr. President, after the old city of Jerusalem was occupied by Jordan in 1949, Jews were not allowed to worship at their own temple site. Yet, strangely enough, ever since Israel's occupation of Jerusalem in 1967, Arab Muslims have been free to worship at their mosque. Shouldn't an action such as this speak volumes? When old Jerusalem is returned to the Arabs as part of the pre-1967 borders, what kind of rights will Israel have to her own Temple Mount, especially with so many Arabs denying that Jews have any historical claim to the land whatsoever? Mr. President, if you did not already know or ponder these facts, you are too ignorant to be offering advice. If you were aware, your motives may just be downright evil. In any event, the best thing you can do is back off and accept a painful reality. The only two-state solution Israel's enemies are interested in is one where they share land by burying Jews underground and building their own houses above the ground.
Listen, children, to a story that was written long ago about a kingdom on a mountain and the valley. Have it for their very own. Go ahead and hit your neighbor. Go ahead and cheat a friend. Do it in the name of heaven. Just to fight for soldier rides away. So the people of the valley sent a message up the hill, asking for the buried treasure, tons of gold for which they kill. Came an answer from the kingdom, with our brothers we will share all the secrets of our mountain, all the riches buried. On earth was all it said.
Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses,
WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, Incorporated, license number 480539, WNS Electric. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Always a pleasure to have my next guest. I've interviewed her several times, and she's kind of a reoccurring regular. Gabriella Hoffman, conservative activist out at UCSD and other places, who I always like to call, and I'll continue to call, the next Ann Coulter. Gabriella, welcome to our program.
Hi, Bob. Thank you for having me so much. I'm delighted to be on again.
It's always a delight to have you. Now, I understand, I read... part of an article that you recently wrote for Washington Times Communities, and it looks like you're spearheading something about supporting Israel out on the college campus. Well, our college campuses have gotten so darn anti-Semitic. I imagine this has not been an easy thing to do. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, myself and another conservative activist from UMass Boston and myself, we're spearheading a Restoring Courage U.S. movement in conjunction with Glenn Beck's Restoring Courage rally in Jerusalem.
Oh, wonderful.
So he picked up on it on his radio program last Monday, I believe. And both my partner and I have been on other radio shows to publicize it. And it's getting a lot of traction. And,
oh, so Glenn Beck actually mentioned this on his radio show?
He mentioned our website, and I think he's going to reach out to us soon. We have some contacts between us to some of his people, so we're waiting to hear back, but they're very interested.
I am glad that guy's getting along. And folks, you've heard me say this before. As you know, I'm a Christian, and I don't believe in Mormon theology, but when it comes to politics and morality, Glenn Beck has his head set squarely on his shoulders. So I'm very excited that Glenn Beck's going out to Israel. And so you say, Gabriella, that your event's kind of coordinating. Is it on the same day or the same week?
Yeah. Or? Uh-huh. Well, Beck is going to have a week-long series of events in
Israel. Jerusalem itself.
Yeah, in Jerusalem itself, in the heart of Israel, of course. And Nicole, my partner and I are coordinating with various people from different states to host rallies in their own respective states. I'm going to be spearheading one here in California somewhere in Southern California. It'll be on August 24th. All of our rallies are going to be on August 24th across the nation. There's a time difference, so we'll coordinate that in the coming weeks. But we have 21 states already on board, and more people keep on emailing us and keep on messaging us to get involved. So it's picking up very, very fast.
That is wonderful. And I can tell you for a fact you have exactly a 10-hour time difference, because my mother lives in Jerusalem, and whenever I want to call her on the phone, I have to figure out what time it is over there. But, you know, isn't it interesting, Gabriella, that it just seems that around the whole world, and particularly on the college campuses, but in Europe and naturally in the Muslim countries, anti-Semitism is just skyrocketing, and I've seen so many conservatives and evangelical Christians getting behind Israel. It's heartening to see. I think Israel's realizing that the conservatives in America are just about the only friends they have left in the world.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, because when you have people who claim to be Jewish, and unfortunately, who undermine Israel's existence and partner with George Soros and all the other self-hating Jews who've either given up Jews to Nazis or who have renounced their Jewish heritage, it's very disheartening. You know, my father is Jewish, and I identify myself as Jewish ethnically, and you can, and people have been trying to dispute that you can't be ethnically Jewish, but my great-grandfather was a rabbi, and it's my dad's whole side is, so I digress.
Well, I had a fellow try to tell me that I wasn't Jewish because I converted to Christianity. And I said, the Jews are both a culture and a religion. If somebody becomes an atheist, the rabbis don't tell him he's not Jewish anymore. So, there's a whole nation. But, of course, that's part of the historical revision, too. A lot of Muslims are teaching that Jews have no historical claim to the land. They want to turn it into Islam-real instead of Israel. It's just... it makes your head spin.
It's absolutely mind-boggling. And the Jews in Israel and the Israelis can find confidence and can look to the evangelical Christians and conservatives for, you know, friendship and for reliance, especially in this time of war deal. And if, you know, the plans for a proposed Palestinian state are, you know, if they go as planned, it's going to be very, very chaotic in the Middle East and also here in the United States. So that's essentially what our movement is going to do to restore courage in the United States, you know, by standing with Israel, because to have a position like that is very discouraged nowadays, especially on college campuses.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what has the climate been at UCSD? It's been a number of years. I used to do a lot out there, but are they actually teaching anti-Jewish things right in their classrooms? Or I guess they wouldn't call it anti-Jewish. They'd call it anti-Zionist, pro-Palestinian. Yeah. That's the lingo.
Well, personally, I have not taken classes yet in my collegiate career that have, you know, explained or propagated that kind of anti-Israeli, anti-Zionist bias. But I've heard some people tell me that there have been instances and that there are professors, but we just haven't come across them. Actually, a couple weeks, 2 weeks ago, was the Israel Apartheid Week. I call it Hitler Youth Week, as David Horowitz properly coined it.
Well, I think you had a much more proper designation.
Yeah. No, well, when he came here about a year ago, that's what he explored and what he explained to the UCSD populace. But recently, the Jewish community has been more responsive to this hateful week, and they had something, but they still, in my opinion, did not do enough, because they're too afraid to get someone who is so quote-unquote anti-Muslim, because they fear that, you know, insulting Islam is going to ruin their presence on campus.
That might make people hate the Jews, as if that hatred wouldn't be there no matter what they did.
Oh, it's already a lasting permanent entity. You can't wipe that hatred off, you know, out of their minds. It's inherently there. It's there from the start. It's basically, you know, imbibed to them at birth. So these people have a, you know, well-pronounced hatred since, you know, at the earliest signs of, you know, life. And I'm not saying like every Muslim does, but where are the moderate Muslims coming out condemning Hamas, or condemning, or the moderate Palestinians who are condemning, you know, Hezbollah and Hamas and the PA and all the other terrorist organizations that are bullying Israel?
Yeah, see, I don't think there's nearly as many moderate Muslims as everybody always says. I know that's the line, it's the rhetoric. I know there are some peaceful Muslims, of course, I've met them, but not nearly as many. And when you listen to the so-called moderate Muslims talk on TV, they always throw in something in there about Israel's illegal occupation of Palestine, mm-hmm. and they don't really come out and condemn the terror. Or if they do, they say Israel's just as much of a terrorist. I call that a Muslim Freudian slip. When you get them talking up, you get a Muslim who says they're against terrorism, you get them talking about the Israelis and the Palestinians, and if they're taking the side of the Palestinians, they're taking the side of terrorists. I mean, if those guys aren't terrorists, the word terrorist should be taken out of the dictionary.
Mm-hmm. No, I wholeheartedly agree with you, because I actually just had a debate with one of my classmates, and she claims to be pro-Israel, but she's sympathetic to the Palestinian cause, which I don't get. That baffles me, and I believe those people in Israel would be known as the far left, who recognize Israel's existence, but would be okay with renouncing territory and giving it to
absolutely, they would. Hold on with me over the break, Gabrielle. I'm with Gabrielle Hoffman, conservative college activist. We'll be right back.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
The sound even more beautiful.
Welcome back to our program. I'm here with Gabriella Hoffman, conservative activist. So you were telling me, and in fact, you were one step ahead of me because I was going to ask you about this. Most Jews in America and many Jews in Israel are liberal, and most Jews in America vote democratically. Why do you suppose that is, Gabriella? It seems like they are their own worst enemies.
No, it's a tragic reality, and I believe it goes to the historical underpinnings of why they vote Democratic, why it's such a set-in-stone tradition, you could say. When Jews started immigrating from the former Soviet Union and other areas where they were, whether they were in pogroms or, in concentration camps or other intense living environments where it was very hostile to Jews, coming to America and seeing that these politicians and people of the Democratic Party, offering comfort and this refuge and equal representation, for those who are oppressed, I think that's where they kind of wielded to. And also the fact that there is this inherent, I'm not an expert on this, but this is what my parents have told me and also what I've heard from reading articles and other basic stuff. But the fact that, there is a sort of guilt that comes with them making a lot of money. And they feel for people who are underrepresented. And I don't like using the term minority. I think it's disrespectful to someone who is African-American or Asian. We're all Americans. And the Democrat, that's a whole nother tiff that we could discuss on another show. But, I think it has to do with this self-guilt or self-hatred that they have of being Jewish, the fact that they've been oppressed and also just factors of that alley. Do you think this is the same? Because this is what I have been accustomed to hearing about why Jews vote Democrat.
Yeah, well, and Dennis Prager had an interesting take on it too. He thought they were caught in a time bubble. He said they're still electing Franklin Roosevelt to fight Adolf Hitler. I mean, my uncle will vote Democrat no matter what it was. Well, the Democratic Party didn't stand for the things back in the 1930s that it stands for today. But getting back to this idea of rich Jews, I wish that stereotype were true. I'm Jewish. There's never been a time in my life where I haven't struggled to make ends meet. In fact, a lot of people don't realize that the word ghetto is actually a Yiddish word because originally in history, well, they weren't the only ones, but it was Jews who were known to populate the ghettos. I still think of Tevye and Fiddler on the Roof saying to God, "Would it spoil some vast eternal plan if I were a wealthy man?" So I wish it were true. I wish all we Jews did have a lot of money. I'm sure you drive around in a Cadillac, Gabriella.
No. I have an older Mercedes and it's a nice car, but my family is struggling now. We used to be upper middle class before the economy crashed and construction went to the lower rungs of society. It's hard to, so of course I'm with you too. Like, not all Jews are rich. We're rich in our minds and we're rich in,
Well, I can point to an old Ford Pinto that I once drove, but I must confess that had more to do with my stupidity than poverty. So that was the worst car ever made. Gabriella, how do you feel so far about the, it's not an election year, but it seems like our election years go on for 2 years now. The Republican candidates, both those who have declared themselves, those who haven't, wanted to get your opinion on some of them at this point. Anybody who's declared or flirting with declaring that you would favor? Anybody that you particularly do not favor and wish were not running?
Yeah, I will definitely run that through you, with the following. Well, right now, the people who have formally declared, a lot of them are some of the old guard and some of them are the new guard.
Newt Gingrich, Mitt Romney, those types?
Yeah. Gingrich, Romney, who else? Tim Pawlenty, Herman Cain.
Oh, you consider Cain of the old guard too, huh?
Well, he's not of the old guard, but
he's definitely the same age.
Yeah, kind of. Well, I guess I'll first start with who I would like to see run.
Okay,
and,
sure.
There has been a congressman. I don't know if you're familiar with Congressman Thaddeus McCotter.
I have heard the name, but have not really followed him.
Well, he goes on Fox, and he's been in Congress for at least 10 years.
What state is he out of?
He's from Michigan, and he knows how Detroit operates and everything.
And so he is somebody making overtures about getting in the race?
Yeah, actually, and if you don't know already, and I can explain, I can go into details about our Eagle Forum convention, where McCotter will be our keynote speaker on one of the days.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah, I'll definitely go into that later. But, you know, Congressman McCotter is making waves, and he's very conservative, and he's very well-spoken. He articulates his thoughts very well, and he's part of the Tea Party crop. And we need people who are principled and who understand and can relate to people and understand our sentiments and our concerns. And he's been very responsive to his constituency and also to, you know, all people who come across him. And he's very well-liked. And unfortunately, he doesn't have that name recognition yet. He could easily get it.
Is he your favorite at this point or just one of your favorites?
Well, he's one of my favorites. And another person I would like to see potentially jump in would be Michelle Bachmann.
I was going to ask you about her. I like her. I think maybe even more than Sarah Palin, although I certainly like both of them.
Absolutely love both women. You know, I love their qualities and how they carry about themselves. They're definitely an inspiration to, you know, young conservative females like myself and to the many other girls who look up to them. And, you know, although, you know, I like Sarah Palin, I'm more confident that Michelle Bachmann could make more waves running for president.
She would make more waves than Palin even, you think? She's certainly a controversial lightning rod.
Well, I believe she would be able to kind of unify the base. And although she's known as the Tea Party candidate, I think a lot of people will like her message. They will be able to empathize with her. She was a foster parent to 23 children.
Oh, yeah. They can't hit her with this Republicans don't care about children nonsense.
Oh, absolutely.
That would make that go away real fast.
Mm-hmm. No, and she has no skeletons in her closet, to my knowledge, except for maybe one or two things, but they're very minor, indiscriminate things. But for the most part, she has a very clean record. She's been in Congress for about four. I think she's now in her third term, and she's very personable, and she's very popular in the primary states like Iowa, South Carolina, New Hampshire, and she's making a lot of waves there. And she's going to be announcing, I think, in Des Moines.
And she hasn't been compromising. She's been standing by her guns when they're talking about raising the ceiling of the debt and stuff.
Oh,
like that.
Absolutely, yeah. And on her principle, she's very pro-life, very traditional pro-marriage. She's just everything you can imagine that comes with being conservative, very pro-Israel, limited government, and, you know, just the whole kit and caboodle she epitomizes. And I would like to see that. I think she could, because Palin, unfortunately, has that celebrity status, celebrity kind of appearance about her because she's always in the news and her family is at this bombardment of endless attention. And I don't know if she would be able to necessarily get past that and, you know, not cause too much. I'm not saying she's incapable of running for, you know, incapable of being president. It's just, I think there's just so much that she's endured. I don't know how much she could endure. She seems to be, you know, fighting it off very well, but it just seems like she'll be constantly inundated with it and that the media will just demolish her. But we never know how things will work out. But I would prefer, I think, in this case, Bachmann to run. I'm not saying, like, Palin should not. If she runs and she gets a lot of support, by all means, I'll support her. But I think this bus tour she's doing, I think, could be setting herself up.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you predict that she will get in the ring or do you predict she's going to hold off for a while?
I'm not entirely certain, but to me, I think her One Nation tour that she just embarked on, I think it kind of positions herself to be a kingmaker more so than an actual candidate. We don't know what tricks are up her sleeve. This could easily be, like, you know, a way for her to transcend and get into the race.
Yeah, she might be a much more valuable commodity by being a kingmaker.
Yeah, because
she just
brings a lot of people. And, you know, there would be clashing heads if she and Bachmann were to run. So I think the two of them do talk to each other on a regular basis. And maybe Palin will just be that cheerleader. We shall see, though. We don't know.
Yeah. And it's interesting because you're talking about how, yes, they have ruined her reputation. Obviously, they're going to do that. I'm sure the Obama smear merchants are ready for anybody. They've even tried to come out with stuff on Christie, and Christie's probably not even going to get in. And yet, of course, in Palin's case, it's already behind her. So it's hard to see. Mitt Romney, a lot of people are predicting that he'll get the nomination. If he does, do you think he's going to be able to get over this whole thing about the Massachusetts healthcare being kind of a pre-showing of the Obamacare? Is he going to be able to rise above that?
I honestly honestly don't think so, because people have been asking him to either apologize for that for his implementation of that program in Massachusetts, or they've been asking him to concede on that fact and to prove how he could be above that sort of past mistake if he were to become president. And unfortunately, to me, he's moderate, and we don't need a moderate. Everyone keeps telling me, well, we need a moderate to win the White House.
Oh, I hate it. Moderate. We always lose elections with moderates. Yes. We lost the election with McCain. McCain's a moderate.
Oh, of course. McCain is a progressive. He's not just a moderate, but a progressive. He was not a conservative. He was for cap and trade and all this other nonsense. And, you know, people are like, well, we need someone like that again, someone who could attract more. And I don't understand why people would rather compromise on principles to get more votes. I think that's the most absurd, ridiculous.
Well, it's a compromise morally, and yet it doesn't work anyway. People, like, you get back to all the historical revision with McCain and Palin. McCain was dead in the water until he brought Palin on. When Palin came on, they had like an 80% approval rating. They were leading Obama by double digits. Then the economy started collapsing. Obama managed to blame it on George Bush and associate McCain with George Bush. And to this day, I hear people saying, oh, McCain might have won if it hadn't been for Palin. No, McCain was not going to win, left to his own devices, and Palin was the only hope that he had. That's what really happened.
Mm-hmm. No, he was completely dry and boring. I was not enthused. You know, I was 17 at the time when he was running for president. And I could not vote, unfortunately. I was like 3 or 4 months shy off of voting. But it's like when she came into the picture, I actually had some renewed hope that possibly win. But, you know, when the economy crashed, and I think that was fixed. I don't think that was a coincidence. I think something must have happened. But I don't want to dabble into conspiracy theories. But how else does an economy collapse if no one is behind it? But either way, you know, it's just like he was just the most boring, dull candidate you could think of. I don't even understand how he won the primary and you know, and went on to be the nominee.
Oh, well, I know how that happened, because the independents in Massachusetts voted him in, not the conservatives. And then he gained momentum by winning New Hampshire. He gained momentum by winning the New Hampshire primary. And so it's interesting. Now, What about Newt Gingrich? You described him as old school. What do you think of some of those comments that he made about what's going on in the Congress right now? And then he tried to backpedal him a little bit.
Well, the fact that he compared Congressman Paul Ryan's path to prosperity to right wing social engineering, I thought that was callous, not to mention disingenuous, and you know, completely out of line. For one thing, we conservatives don't believe in social engineering. You could look to the left and look to our counterparts on the left for that. We don't believe in social engineering. The fact that it's kind of oxymoronic that to be, you know, in to be said in itself to even conceive a notion like right-wing social engineering. And, you know, just the other comments that he makes, and then he backtracked and said, oh, well, I've always been for Paul Ryan's plan and this and that. But it's just, he's so wishy-washy. I've seen him speak in person. Like, he's a very intelligent guy, but I feel like he always talks down to you. Like, I am a better person. I'm more above you. And he does not relate to the average.
Well, and talk about being unelectable. The media pillaged him back when he was Speaker of the House. I don't think he could have risen above that, even without all this new stuff. And this stuff with Tiffany's, I mean, again, it's stupid stuff. But Newt, just answer the question and move on. Quit wasting our time with this stuff.
Yeah, I think he probably will drop out soon enough, or when the primaries come, because many people are disenchanted with, you know, what he, you know, with his marriages and just, you know, and the other policies, like how he has been for cap and trade. Have you seen that infamous commercial he did with Nancy Pelosi? That's a huge turnoff. You cannot vote for a Republican. Same with Tim Pawlenty. He's a big fan of cap and trade, although he recently switched his position. I don't trust him either.
Well, they always conspicuously switch their positions when they decide to get into the ring. But that's...
Oh, absolutely. But they still have those attachments to those ideas deep down inside. Of course, it's unavoidable. Like, you can't just say, oh, well, I just woke up and I had an epiphany and this and that. But no, they still cling to those beliefs. And it's just like Gingrich, he's part of the establishment. The Tea Party would not like him. I'm involved in the Tea Party, and I just hear people tell me, well, you know, he's just so so old guard, and he doesn't understand what's going on. I feel like he's in this bubble, you know, and he won't. I don't think he'll be able to clinch the nomination, and I hope he doesn't. I'm hoping some other candidates jump into the race, and we'll see, you know, who from there. I think Bachman will, maybe Congressman McCarter. That would be interesting to see. But at the time being, I don't really have a formal endorsement.
Now, if somebody who wasn't your first pick, or if I don't think either Newt or Romney will get the nomination, actually. I think Romney has a better chance than Newt, but I don't think either one of them will. But if one of them did, would you still vote for them as opposed to Barack Obama, or would you be one of the people that just doesn't vote?
Well, of course, every vote counts, because this is the election that determines whether or not America will exist. And it's not apocalyptic.
Right.
It's not supposed to be, you know, these fear tactics that I'm employing, like all of us far right wing extremists. I was listening to your thing from that commentator who was saying that the right wing of the Republican Party, the hate.
Oh, that Howard Dean. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, gosh. But, you know, what were you talking about? But, you know, it's just like
voting for the lesser of two evils sometimes.
Yeah.
Okay. So you would, I agree with that. We would, people always say you can't vote for the lesser of two evils. Well, the alternative between the lesser of two evils is the greater of two evils. So
unfortunately,
what else are we going to do?
Unfortunately, yes, but I hope all of our fellow voters vote accordingly, and they don't vote in a moderate and be fooled last time with these, you know, false notions of we're going to do this and we're going to do that and the same old, same old. Like, I hear the same messages that I heard when I was 17 that McCain was saying, coming from Tim Pawlenty. He is the most bland, dry candidate I've ever seen. And he just doesn't, you know, have that appeal that you would want in a, you know, conservative candidate. And the fact that he flip-flops. And, you know, Romney is going to have a huge problem dealing with the Romney care. It's a given. And we don't like, so we want Obamacare repealed, in the fact that he was the one who implemented it, and the fact that Obama praised him for creating such a system. It's just bad news. And he's damaged goods. He can't necessarily, I don't think he can recover.
Yeah. And if some of these guys like Newt and Romney, they run against Barack Obama, and all the Democratic ads have to do is play them talking, play Romney refusing to apologize for health care, play that clip that Gingrich had when he was on TV, when he was talking against Paul Ryan. And that's it. I mean, it's like handing candy to the Democrats.
Oh yeah. And what you were mentioning about them attacking Chris Christie. Well, he's not very conservative either,
he's not a moral, social conservative at all. It's just a fiscal one.
And he's anti-Second Amendment, anti-gun rights, unfortunately. The way he's handling the unions is very great. But, you know, other than that, we don't know much about him. And I don't like the fact that some people are encouraging him to run the race.
No, I wouldn't want to see Christie. I wouldn't want to see Christie. I would still vote for him ahead of Obama. But you got to understand, sure, I would vote for Donald Duck ahead of Obama.
So. I think anyone is better than Obama. But
now, if you'll indulge me, I'm going to put the crystal ball in your hand again. What do you think? Is Obama going to be a one-term president? I think this country might just be stupid enough to reelect him despite everything.
I sincerely hope he is, because what my parents keep reminding me with each day, and what we see with this new social media czar and the other abridgments to our speech or any other ways to limit us, and also the fact that the left is going after my friend and the very, very well-known activist, James O'Keefe. I'm friends with him and a lot of others.
Oh, cool.
And he was recently, this is developing, but I can't speak much about it, but he has been withheld his right to travel to California, to other states where he has appearances. Most likely it's rooted in the fact that he's James O'Keefe and he's, you know, trying to expose people. And the left is systematically going after the right. They're going to try to suppress our criticism of Obama. They're going to try to suppress our free speech.
That's because they can't win in the realm of ideas or honest debate, so the smear tactics are all they have left.
True. No, so 2012 is a critical year. We either win and take back America, or we become the Soviet Union. And my parents have this fear deep down in their gut that this country is slowly becoming the Soviet Union. And they say it's even worse because this has been a free society, you know, a bastion of free market ideas, the Constitution and Judeo-Christian principles. And unfortunately, we're falling into a country and a place, you know, with Marxist-Leninists and other communists and other socialists.
Okay, now, Gabriella, we only have about a minute left, but I want to say you are a rare commodity, because we're always hearing that Obama appeals to the youth. And yet you are a college student against Obama. So in less than 1 minute, imagine that some of your college student liberal friends are listening. Why should they, as youth, as college students, not vote for Obama?
Well, Obama will not ensure your future to anyone who's in college or even younger. He is setting this country up to be like the Soviet Union. And to learn more about how, I want to kind of make a pitch for our Eagle Forum convention, and I can, you know, give you the details.
Okay, go ahead and give that quickly.
Sure, sure. So we're having it's called Taking Flight, and it's hosted by Eagle Forum in San Diego from June 10th to the 11th. And it's going to be at the Town and Country Inn. And Bob, you should come as well. Bring anyone you know, your listeners can, you know, come as well. And we're going to have Congressman Thaddeus McCotter, who I mentioned. We're also going to have Rick Amato, my boss, and a fellow KCBQ talk show host like yourself. He's going to be emceeing. We also have Andrew Breitbart, James O'Keefe, if he can luckily travel. Duncan Hunter and Duncan Hunter.
Okay. Thank you, Gabriella. We're out of time, but Gabriella, you're wonderful. Gabriella Hoffman, conservative activist, will have you on again soon, and we will see you next week, everybody.
All right, perfect. Thank you.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.